Mini-episode 565 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 565. You've got FDH managing partner Rick Morris with you today, and one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, a longtime regular on the program and somebody who we are always happy to talk with about what he does best, covering the intersection of TV and technology. Of course, Tomorrow Will Be Televised is the hub for all of this. And again, whether it be his ongoing columns, whether it be his webcasting that he is doing, the crossover and doing some TV along with that, Simon is definitely the best person to talk about matters when you've got, say, the TV up front. We have done this for a number of years, talking about it with him and occasionally some of our other FDH Lounge dignitaries. Today, we've got them all to ourselves. We're going to talk about what he saw at the up fronts and the new fronts. Simon, pleasure to have you back on, my friend. Please illuminate for everybody one more time again here. Where's the best place for people to find your content?
Absolutely, Rick. It's a pleasure to be back with you and your listeners. Tomorrow Be Televised is now in its eighth year on the air. We are the first and the only internet radio program or podcast that's simulcast live on television. We're on Mondays and Fridays at 3 o'clock Eastern. That's noon on the West Coast on Blog Talk Radio, which some people are, I'm sure many people, your listeners, are catching right now on. And we're also on Brooklyn Independent Media, which is the wonderful cable channel that's now in its second season. It is available throughout New York City on Verizon Fios. It is throughout Brooklyn on Time Warner Cable, Cablevision Systems, and RCN. And around the country, you can also catch the wonderful programming that Brooklyn Independent Media does at vimeo.com/BKIndieMedia. And our show, by the way, in addition to be running live on Brooklyn Independent Media, we're also replayed on both Monday and Friday nights at 11 o'clock and throughout the week on their schedule.
Wonderful. Those are definitely conversations that people need to be checking out as far as you know, some of the ones that I have caught as well as other members of your audience, whether you're talking with TV producers, executives, folks in various stages of the media food chain on the content side or other aspects of it as well. It's always great to be able to catch those things and to be able to talk about what you've been learning, and that kind of takes us to this year and the upfronts and the new fronts that you've been covering. There is so much to be able to get into. As I mentioned to you just off air a second ago here, one of the things that really kind of caught my attention going through your columns this year was the new fronts, which, again, with these events for the online services. One would think in just about all instances, given that it's an ongoing matter of educating advertisers as far as bang for the buck, whether it be mobile or more traditional web programming, that they would be hungry for as much publicity as they could get. And yet, you were running into some issues there. You observed any number of places where there were restrictive credentialing policies in place. That seems to me to be very, very counterintuitive, very counterproductive, I would think.
It's very, Rick, and just to give you a little bit of context, when we have theme weeks here in New York and I believe around the country, like Advertising Week or C Week, which is coming up next month, or New York City Television Week, pretty much the majority of press get in with one overall pass. With the Digital Content New Front Week, which was actually 2 weeks this year, the Interactive Ad Bureau, which is a wonderful organization that put this together and oversees it, asked all the press to go to each and every event presenter to get credentials. You have to go to up to 30-plus companies. As it turned out, nearly half the companies did not respond with press passes. Some responded very late in the game. By the way, I'll give you a sense of some of the companies that did not respond. Yahoo, Fullscreen, News Corp, Time Warner Cable, which, after the disclosure, runs our program on their and runs Brooklyn Penny and their cable systems, Endemol Beyond, TheStreet.com. It was absolutely amazing. that a lot of these folks just would not even give it the time of day. It was like you were going into the black hole and nothing coming out. In addition, Sony PlayStation, which one would think would open up their event to the press, did not. Healthy Nation, a website and a video on demand service I've known for years, they were among our first guests on our program back in 2007. They closed themselves up to press. Bloomberg Media, which was on the first day, limited press. It was really weird. And here's an interesting statistic. Jack Myers, who I write for, and has just upgraded his site to MediaVillage.com, wonderful site, came out with this wonderful stat. If you do a search of articles about the TV network upfronts, not just the ones this past week, but the ones throughout, starting in late February on, 2015, you get 38,300,000 listings, different listings. Digital content,
wow.
New content, 2015, 235,000. That disparity tells you a lot. And what it does tell you is that upfronts or new fronts, one of the big things about them is they give the public, through the press, the opportunity to hear where a service is at and where it's going. And if you don't get the press involved with them, you don't get the coverage. You're off the radar screen. And by the way, there's an event called Internet Week going on here in New York City that also is undergoing the same thing, because PKPR, their agency, is not allowing the majority of press who want to cover that event to go and see it. And that's a real shame. It's amazing to me that 250 events are going on this week in New York City, and the majority of press that want to cover it can't, because of what I think is atrocious thinking by either the public relations rep, even by the organizers, or by whoever is pulling the strings, who are media sponsors or whatever, for that terrific event.
What's very interesting to me in all of that is, beyond, again, the larger notion of it being counterproductive, that I'm trying to get the word out about their medium and the growing successes there, is when you mention a company like News Corp, where clearly this is not the issue when you go to the actual upfront events. So it sort of lends you to believe that within a lot of these major companies, when you've got the new media on the one side, it seems like the left hand doesn't necessarily know what the right hand's doing as far as consistent press coverage.
Well, a great example of that, Rick, was Sony. Crackle, which was part of the digital content new front last year, then they did their own thing this year, was great with press, wonderful event. And then Sony PlayStation, which just launched Powers, which is their first ever scripted series, is also available on their Sony smart TV sets, got renewed, closed the door to the press. Now, to be fair, by the way, we got advance knowledge of that. It wasn't we weren't surprised by it. I didn't go to Sony and find, oh, can't go. IAB told us, to their credit. One of the things that has made this upfront, new front season weird, if you want to expand things, is that you will have some programming ventures within a particular company do upfronts or new fronts and some not. Look at Viacom. Nickelodeon does an upfront. Spike TV, which has not done one in years, I thought did a very effective upfront this year at Cipriano's on 42nd Street. And they're really getting into the scripted TV game. We can talk about a lot more about that. But TV Land does not do one. VH1 does not do one. MTV does. Fox, for example. FX did their annual bowling party, although they did not do a press breakfast as they did before. Fox's Spanish language networks, for the first time in several years, did not do an upfront event. They even come up with a press release about what Mundo Fox and the various Fox channels like Fox Deportes, Fox Sports is up to. So it's weird. And I also thought that a lot of networks like WGN America and Bounce TV and others that I thought were in position to do an upfront event this year did not. Also, some services that did one last year to great effect, like AMC, like El Rey, like Nuevo TV, like Pivot, either did not do one or did an event just for advertisers only. And I think it will ultimately end up hurting them, unfortunately.
There's a couple things there that I certainly want to follow up on. And like you said, the Spike TV thing, certainly. But first, because you mentioned Crackle, something that they have carried the last couple of years, of course, in addition to Jerry Seinfeld's original web TV show, Comedians and I'm probably botching the name here, Comedians and Getting Coffee in
Comedians
Cars.
And cars Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Very
I've watched
show.
It enough times. You'd think I'd know what the name was and be able to rattle it off there. But they've also carried Seinfeld. A little bit. Partial seasons, of course, we find out that the full catalog is going to Hulu, and that made some big news. But Jerry Seinfeld himself in sort of an emceeing capacity at the Crackle thing, also made a little bit of news. I'd like to get your thoughts on the comments that were made vis-a-vis the Internet. I don't know if, again, an elitist sort of reading of the words would be a correct one when he's talking about cat videos and YouTube. He seemed to be dismissing pretty much everything that's on YouTube, which I think to me and everybody would be painting with too broad of a brush here. What were your sense of his comments, and whether he was calling out the things that deserved to be, or whether he was going a little far with that?
I think he may have been a little tongue-in-cheek about the YouTube comment.
Okay.
I was there. It was a response to an audience question, and I think he was sort of trying to say, you know, we shouldn't be looking at the web just for user-generated content. YouTube certainly is what much more than user-generated videos. They have a lot of superstars that have done stuff, and they're now even working on scripted originals. I want to say something about YouTube, by the way, in a little bit, because it was at their Brandcast, which I thought was fantastic, but with one big missing. But I think Jerry was sort of playing a little tongue-in-cheek, and he certainly was trying to give the impression that, you know, don't see the Internet for one thing. You know, the Internet is far better than, you know, than user. I mean, he was sort of giving a veneer that users are awful. They're not all awful. Some wonderful talents have come out of it. But I think it was a little more tongue-in-cheek. I thought what was fascinating, though, was at Hulu, where he was at, that was the big story that Hulu was making. And I think, frankly, it's the most overblown story of the year. The big story at Hulu was not the Seinfeld reruns, because everybody can watch Seinfeld on local stations all over the country, hint, hint, hint. But the big story is that Hulu is going to go on Cablevision systems and other cable operators on the television set this summer as a video-on-demand service, or as a linear television service, a la HBO. That was the big story that Hulu and I have a journalist covering it, myself included. That should have been the big story coming out of that Hulu event. And I think it's also, and I think you're going to see more deals like that, where Netflix, where Amazon, where Yahoo, other services are going to get, you might say, the premium service treatment on cable operators around the country. And I think it points to something very important that the cable industry and satellite industry is realizing, which is that more people are watching Hulu and Netflix, et cetera, on the television set through smart TVs and devices like Roku and Chromecast that make TVs smart. They are not watching Netflix on the personal computer. They're not watching it in mobile. They're watching it on television. And Netflix is taking a bigger and bigger bite of the viewing of network television. And I think the cables are realizing, hey, if we want to stop some people from switching us off and turning on Fios TV or turning our Prism TV from CenturyLink, we have to take these services on and put them on the set.
Absolutely, that's a development that has been a couple of years in the making and continues to go in that direction. And I thought your point about Seinfeld was very well spoken in your column there, and I say this as somebody who is, like a lot of people, a Seinfeld completist, but the notion of, oh my God, finally, Seinfeld is going to be ubiquitous. You know, where have people been for the last 16 years? So I don't understand the notion that now you can watch a Seinfeld episode whenever you want to. You know, like syndication and TBS haven't been blanketing us all this period of time anyway. So I thought that was a great point, and I want to ask you, I'm going to ask a follow-up here, your thoughts on YouTube and on what they're doing, because they have been sort of at the forefront here in terms of the new fronts the last couple of years and in terms of trying to move beyond just the early days of the user-generated videos and into something more, and it would seem that they're sort of now, you know, maybe 2-3 years into this whole transition of where they're trying to go. So what was your sense of how that's going?
Well, I was at YouTube's Brandcast at Madison Square Garden, and it was, like last year, an extraordinary event. It is one of the best-produced events of any kind that you can see. Everything from the way the stage looks, to who comes out, to the talent involved. I think that YouTube really gave a wonderful picture, given it's also its 10th anniversary, of the contribution it has made to American television and to culture. Where the Brandcast falls far, and by the way, something else that happened is that the author of The Fault in Our Stars, later the famous movie, I thought gave one of the most incredible presentations I've seen in recent years, where he was basically saying to advertisers, if you don't advertise on some of the more unique programming that YouTube does, you are going to lose that audience because they're going to find other ways to fund that content. They're not going to use you. And that was a really that was the controversial, by the way, I think, speech of any upfront this year. People are still talking about it. I thought it was very moving, very inspiring, amazing thing. The problem with YouTube's broadcast is you have no sense of where YouTube is going. You don't get any idea of here's the new talent we've got coming up that you should pay attention to. We've got this new move in the scripted original series, and here's the first ones we're doing. You came away with zero about what they're up to, where they're going. And one would think, if you're doing 2 hours showcasing YouTube, don't you think you should take like 5, 10, 15 minutes to say, here's what's coming up? By the way, one of the ongoing issues, Rick, with these new fronts is they will announce programs, but they won't tell you when the programs will happen. I'm not saying you got to give specifics like, you know, June 21st at 9 o'clock, but you got to tell us, like, it's coming this summer, it's coming this fall, because advertisers want that information. They don't want to be surprised. And if you don't tell people when you're going to do something, you're going to lose credibility with them. If you announce a project that doesn't happen, it's a credibility loss. And you wonder why advertisers are not going to be with you. So I think YouTube, while they had a great audience, 2,400 people, and they had this incredible presentation, I think blew it by not telling people, here's what's coming up. Even with Bruno Mars doing his Uptown Funk number, which was sensational, one of the best musical numbers of the entire front time. And we've had some very good ones this year, from the likes of Jesse J at MTV to Naturally 7 opening the show for the CW last Thursday. YouTube needs to do a better job talking about where it's going. And this is, by the way, one of the problems with Google. Google still does not take responsibility for saying to people, here's where we're at, here's where we're going. They let other people do it. And Google should take some responsibility for that. It's a shame. By the way, as I said, the broadcast was sensational. They just need to say, here's where we're going.
Interesting. And we'll see if they kind of take those ideas going forward. Because as you indicated, there are some areas of improvement for them. But before we get to one of the first submitted questions here, I want to ask you a follow-up and go back to we had mentioned a little bit previously about Spike TV, about the event that you attended. Of course, again, they hadn't done one of these upfronts in a couple of years, and, of course, the occasion of doing it this year was to announce that they are sort of moving out of that man ghetto, if you will, diversifying to more broad content and everything that that's going to encompass. So what were your thoughts on what they had to say about that and what their chances for success may be?
They're putting more variety in the schedule, and they're already off to a good start with that, Rick, with Lip Sync Battle. How NBC let this thing go by, especially with Jimmy Fallon, of course, doing it so many times on The Tonight Show in the last year or so, beats me, because it's one of the big hits of the spring. It did very well for Spike TV throughout. It's already been renewed for an expanded second season next year. And they're off to the races. And they've got a big move back into scripted television starting this summer with Tut, which I can tell you from the sizzle reel looks really impressive with the Oscar winner Ben Kingsley in a major role. Spike TV is an example of where TV is going. We are seeing this incredible blitz of scripted television, especially scripted drama. And Spike is really going to go whole hog with this. They got a lot of concepts with major players in development, one which deals with emergency response in the matter of earthquakes and other natural disasters. I think it's got great potential. We'll see if that becomes a series. I think all the concepts that they've announced are really, really good, and we'll see how Tut does. If Tut does great, I think Spike will make a major move into scripted TV. And it's, again, I think this is the reaction to what Netflix is doing, Hulu and Amazon, the fact that more people are watching them on smart TVs and smart TV-making devices. And everybody's realizing that it is a scripted drama or a scripted comedy is a great way to get an image. It's a great way to show people that you are a pace setter in television.
Well, with all of that said, there was nothing I heard in that that suggests any kind of coherent image. So do you have any kind of sense of how they view themselves right now, or do you think they even view it as a work in progress in terms of what their core identity is going to be?
I think they view it as a semi-work in progress. They're very clear that they want to be 50-50 men-women.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be clear about how they ultimately want to get there, or whether they, but I get the sense, though, that they are making a big attempt with scripted television and even with Lip Sync Battle to feature women. For example, everyone's talking about the Miley Cyrus imitation Anne Hathaway did with Wrecking Ball, which was a great clip, by the way. And you're seeing, I think, more efforts throughout the schedule to get women involved, either as hosting or co-hosting unscripted shows or to have them have major roles in whatever scripted TV they do.
Interesting. Well, once their evolution goes through another year or two, it'll be really interesting to see what they look like at that point. I have a message. A couple things came in via Twitter, some via direct message, such as Sprosty457. Question about your column with ESPN. This is a very, very interesting development there. They're going to be sharing the NFL wild card game next winter with ABC. And again, they've been swallowing up all the programming. All I hear from some of the older people that I know, potentially my dad among them, is how come all these things are on cable? And I tell everybody when I hear that, well, that's to force everybody to have ESPN. But then they go and do that for a couple of years now. They've been rebroadcasting the British Open later in the day on ABC. They've been doing the same thing with Wimbledon. So they've already been sort of undercutting that a little bit to try to reach some of the elderly folks that may not have cable and some of the cord cutters. But this is going further than anything they've really done previously. Well, what's their justification for sharing the game with ABC? Obviously, they're going to have a wider audience. And obviously, again, I know that they have really enjoyed the wider audience that they've had with the national championship game in football and how they've done the simulcast on the different channels and putting the different spin on it. But what was their sense of conveying the pluses outweighing the minuses on this?
I think they want to make more combo buys and advertising with ABC and ESPN, of course, both being in the Disney family. That's why the ESPYs, for example, is moving off ESPN and going solely on ABC. That's why the NFL wildcard game, which ESPN got after several years of trying from the NFL last year, is going to be that simulcast. I think they wanted to do more combo buys. They really made it clear. For example, next year, when SportsCenter launches a 7 to 9 o'clock morning show on opposite Good Morning America, and Mike and Mike in the Morning will move from Bristol, Connecticut to right above GMA Studios, they would like to make combo buys where, okay, if you want the broadest audience possible, you buy GMA, you buy Mike and Mike, and you buy SportsCenter. And I think they're just trying to get more synergy with ABC. And, of course, there'll be a lot of stuff that ESPN will continue to keep exclusive. They will definitely keep that college football playoff exclusive. They'll keep Wimbledon exclusive. They have the U.S. Open now, which they will not give to ABC, from what I understand. It's now all ESPN rather than being CBS and also part USA or part Tennis Channel. And of course, NBA Finals is an ABC property. So this is not a new thing, but I think they're trying to do more synergy, particularly with ad sales, to give combo buys with ABC and Disney.
That's a very interesting development there on their part, and again, approaching it from a business sense. It had to be a little bit uncomfortable for them. It was the elephant in the room, I'm sure, for John Skipper and everybody with the canning of Bill Simmons a couple of days before the upfronts, and it has been speculated in a lot of quarters since that the decision was made fairly abruptly in the light of Bill Simmons' appearance on the Dan Patrick Show and the news that was made there, although nobody's really substantiated that. But how much of a pall did it seem to be over the proceedings for the ESPN folks, or do you think they moved through it fairly gracefully?
It wasn't in the proceedings, but afterward, when Skipper did a quick Q&A with the media, it was the number one thing. It was Bill Simmons, what happened. And it was tough to hear, by the way, because all the reporters were crowding around in one like little corner of the Minsk Golf Theater in the lobby, and so some of it you couldn't hear because Skipper wasn't mic'd. But I got this sense that it was abrupt, that Simmons, in a way, sort of forced it on. I did not hear the Dan Patrick Show appearance. I don't know how much of that was in play. But there was no question that Simmons was openly in public, you know, trying to negotiate a better deal. And sometimes that can backfire on you. And I understand that some of the Grantland people are staying. Some are moving on with whatever Bill Simmons decides to do. He's a wonderful talent. And it's a shame that they couldn't work out a deal.
It's a really interesting and unique moment in terms of what's going to happen there with Grantland specifically, because for a publication online that has sort of modeled itself after the National from 1990 and 91 back in the day there and sort of tried to be this era's version of it, I think succeeded in a lot of ways. It really is going to be a kind of a crossroads now with Simmons Many think looking to replicate that elsewhere. Wherever he makes his next deal, there's long been talk of him getting some of his deep-pocketed buddies like Jimmy Kimmel behind something like that to try to replicate it. So for something like ESPN, which is always going to have ESPN.com as a mammoth entity, but has had sort of mixed success in going beyond that, 538.com, one hears, hasn't generated the clicks yet that they have anticipated. What's your sense at this point in time of where ESPN may go with some of these niche properties online? Because a media giant like them really does set the tone for a lot of other places.
I think they'll go pretty good. I mean, I think the Grambling situation was an unfortunate situation that happened because, you know, Bill was like openly speculating, well, how much money can I really get in terms of trying to make this site the best it can possibly be? And what is the real result behind ESPN in funding what I'm doing? So I think it's a special case. But ESPN's done very well with their websites. They've done very well with their outreaches on mobile and their Watch ESPN app. They've even showcased recently, for example, with college softball in the last couple of days, they've had this sort of bases loaded thing where you're able to see some of the regionals that they were showing on the Watch ESPN or the ESPN3 app. So I think ESPN will be in fine shape. They have a lot of sports. They're not dependent on one sport specifically. They have a lot of they have stuff with the NCAA. They've got the college football playoff. Although I wish they would not carry as many bowl games. I think the bowl game situation, frankly, is out of whack. NCAA is saying they're going to endorse three more games. Most of these games, frankly, do not get the audience. Basically helps the sponsors and local people. And it also involves teams that, frankly, do not belong in a college football playoff, belong in a bowl game. I would love to see the NCAA – I'm going off a tangent. But I would love to see the NCAA increase the bowl eligibility from 6 games to 8. Now they have a 12-game schedule. Some people play 13. For 6 and 6 teams to make bowl games, that's breaking even. You don't go to a bowl game because you break even or you don't even pass. We've seen 5 and 7 teams go to bowl games. Ridiculous. There should be either a cut down in bowl games or the college football playoff to be extended to 16 teams, and that way use the existing bowl system to make it work. You know, 4 games the first week, 8-4-2-1. And I think ESPN would have a field day. You would preserve the bowl system, and I think you'd make some of the minor bowl games much more valuable, knowing that they're part of a playoff, the way that we have with March Madness with college basketball. By the way, one thing I want to say about ABC, one thing they should be congratulated for, whatever you think of their new schedule, is that they are keeping on American Crime, which I think is one of the most extraordinary shows that any broadcast network has put on. It's a show that deals with race. It deals with how we deal with ourselves. John Ridley, the creator, the Oscar winner for 12 Years a Slave, and his terrific, diverse crew have done a magnificent job. The acting is extraordinary. I hope it gets every Emmy Award nomination it can and wins some, including maybe Best Drama of the Year. It's one of the great achievements in recent broadcast history. I put on a league with Hill Street Blues 30 years ago, which also was in the same time period, Thursday night at 10 o'clock, and hung on its nails. Grant Tinker, the head of NBC at the time, gave it a second season, got 16 Emmy nominations, won 8, including Best Drama Series of the Year, and I'm going to predict that will happen with American Crime. It's an extraordinary show, and I hope when it comes back next year that as many people as possible watch it.
Well, that's one heck of a comparison with Hill Street Blues, no question about it. By the way, I share your grievance on the bowl system, Simon, although my outrage is more narrowly focused on the fact that my Ohio Bobcats were one of the few teams that was bowl eligible last year that did not make it. So I am crying for the system to be shaken up as well, certainly. But, it is a mess with the dozens and dozens of meaningless games that they have there, no question about it.
College football playoff showed is that you can take these major bowl games and make them big hits because they're part of a playoff system. And it showed. The ratings were sky high. You saw games like Chick-fil-A Bowl or whatever play a role in determining a college football national championship on the field. And that's a wonderful thing. And I'd like to see at least go to eight teams, but ultimately I'd like to see 16. And again, the bowl eligibility go to 8 games from 6. I think if you go to 8 games, you have better bowl games. You don't have these teams that get rewarded for passing or for breaking even making it. And I think that would be – and I think the ratings would go up.
Those would be big changes from where we are now, no question about it. On the John Ridley subject there, every year it seems that you and I discuss this because it's one of the things that you cover the very, very most, that being diversity in television. And you were always charting this from year to year. Whether the institutions as a whole or separately seem to be moving forward or backwards What are your thoughts coming out of the new fronts and up fronts this year as far as how that goes, big picture, and any notable things in the smaller picture?
I was talking about this with Eric Deegans, the National Public Radio TV critic, who's also a judge of the Peabody Awards, which are coming up May 31st, about this on my show Monday. No question, things are moving forward, big time, on a lot of levels. And the great thing is it's on a lot of levels, not just one level. You have an American crime. You have what ABC did this year with How to Get Away with Murder, with Shonda Rhimes becoming the first woman of color, person of color, to program a whole night of broadcast network television. And she has a new show coming up as well with Varela Eos and The Killing Fame. You had Black-ish, which is hanging in there, but I think is going to make it. Fresh Off the Boat, mid-season show. You had Jane the Virgin, which, to CW's credit, is going to stay for a second season, even though the ratings are low. Great second season. Gina Rodriguez and the crew were at the CW event last Thursday. She was incredibly acknowledging to the entire, to everybody for making the thing go. It's winning the Peabody Award. I think it will really be helped this coming year. But we're seeing things like the Sundance Institute working with people of color in an episodic television lab. We're seeing the American Black Film Festival making a major push here in New York next month in terms of developing more talent of color to get roles in scripted TV, in made-for-TV movies, so on and so forth. You're seeing projects like Bessie with Queen Latifah, Flavor Unit developing made-for-TV movies for BET, and in this case with Bessie for HBO. We're seeing more and more efforts to get women, people of color, involved in making television, in forming production companies, in getting into decisive roles at the studios, at networks, et cetera, et cetera. And that is wonderful to see. I think that we are, and we're also seeing, for example, websites or web services developing Latino ventures. Condé Nast is doing a new Latino channel, for example. Viva Nuestro, New Life, or Our Lives. So it's wonderful to see on a lot of different levels diversity being attacked because, let's face it, we are right now about 40% of the people in this country are people of color. We're going to hit 50%. We're going to get the multicultural majority a lot sooner than we think. And if we don't have a television system on every level that reflects where this country is going, we got problems.
Absolutely. And all these changes behind the camera, this continuing evolution will, of course, continue to affect what we see in front of the other cameras. Question got here from at Muni Stadium from Twitter. This is an interesting one, and this is sort of hitting close to my heart, asking about the very scaled-back role of sitcoms on NBC relative to what there have been the last couple decades, because FDH Lounge dignitary Bob Glassman, his nephew Rick Glassman, is on Undateable. So that's been sort of a pet project of mine as far as pushing it, trying to get people to watch it. They had the live show that was on this to kick off the sweeps here in May and going all live for 13 episodes starting in the fall. So thoughts on the role of the sitcom at NBC? It's obviously a very scaled down part of their programming at this point, but how do you think the Peacock folks see this particular medium going forward?
NBC is making, Rick, a major investment in live programming. It's the Neil Patrick Harris best time ever. It's Undateable going live as a Friday night sitcom for a full year. It may be with either one, may both have live commercial breaks or live commercials in them. Dick Wolf is doing a live courtroom Judge Judy show called You're the Jury. Maya Rudolph may do a live variety show. There's no question that this is the stake in the ground that NBC is making, that we have to get people to watch programming live. And one way they can do that is by doing live programming on all different levels. In terms of comedies, NBC is not abandoning the comedy. They still have about five or six shows that they're going to premiere in mid-season. The problem has been is that they've had a very bad track record in the last couple of years with sitcoms. Even shows critically acclaimed like Community and Parks and Recreation did not get a mass audience in recent years. And shows like One Big Happy, Marry Me, About a Boy, even for the critical acclaim, they just did not make it. Something about the style, something about the pace, something about the form, something did not click the way that Seinfeld ultimately clicked. So I think that NBC is just saying, well, let's give most of the genre rest. Let's try one, see if it works live, and then we'll find ways to get the other five or six comedy shows that we've approved into the schedule. But I think the bigger story is the live situation. And I think we'll all be watching to see whether live programming can work on a regular basis with people the way it did, of course, in the early days of television in the 1950s.
Very clever. Trying to ape the way that sports are these days as far as being considered the one DVR-proof form of programming. Very, very clever on their part. We'll see if that works.
And Rick, also, something else you should point out is that, you know, NBC's been doing these musical specials every December. We had Sound of Music. We had Peter Pan last year. We've got The Wiz coming up this year. I think it's great Stephanie Mills is going to be in there as Annie M. I would make one recommendation to NBC when they do live musicals. Have a live audience watching them. I think one of the big problems with both Peter Pan and Sound of Music was the performers did not get feedback from the audience. They did not hear, they didn't hear applause. They didn't hear yells, et cetera, et cetera. And I think had they done so, it might have helped fuel the performances. For example, with Allison Williams, you know, Brian Williams' daughter who did Peter Pan, I thought there were moments where she was absolutely terrific, and then there were moments like the critical moment, like when Tinkerbell, he's telling the audience to clap, which was ruined in part by a graphic telling people it was going to come. Again, it would have helped there was a live studio audience to be part of that moment, and I think it would have helped Williams' performance in that regard.
No question about it. Yeah, that's the way that people are used to seeing theater presented, and in a sense, the crowd is part of the show. That's an excellent point, and one hopes that they will tweak that going forward. Question here from F. Sean Trench. In terms of this was another point as well here from your columns as far as corporate synergy and what they were doing at Turner. We talked a little bit before about ESPN/ABC, but your column about Turner really kind of showcased, this is a different use of the word diversity because it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with races or genders, but all the different elements under the Turner programming banner coming together there for the new front, or I'm sorry, for the upfront in this case. So to ask this question, what was your sense of how it played out and as far as the advantages and disadvantages of putting this very disparate group all together?
I thought it played very well. I thought it was great to see all of these networks come together. The same thing with NBC, and NBC Universal Cable started doing that last year. The one problem you have is that if you have an all-together approach and you have networks that you're representing but they don't get the big face time, it can hurt. I thought that when, in Turner's case, it was great on animation to see Adult Swim, but zero on Cartoon Network, and especially zero on Boomerang, which has been now reformatted to become an original programming channel. It would have been nice to, again, I go back to the YouTube thing, take 5 or 10 minutes to tell us where Cartoon Network and Boomerang are going. With NBC Universal Cable, Sprout was there. The Chica and some of the process from Sprout were there, but except for a couple of video clips and a sizzle reel with Chica doing her thing, by the way, it was made for the sizzle reel, not part of her show, we didn't hear much about where Sprout's going. Sprout's got an interesting new show coming up on News World this fall. Wouldn't it be nice to have seen that a little bit? So I think the danger is if you do an event which is all-encompassing, take the time to showcase some of these channels, whether it's a Sprout, which is a channel on the way up in NBC Universal, or if it's a channel like Cartoon Network or Boomerang, which are major milestones in their existence.
Exactly, and although I was paraphrasing it, yeah, I think that was the very gist of Sean's question, vis-a-vis getting a chance to show everything that you've got there, because you've just got dozens of shows and so many different elements when you're looking at the entire corporate banner there, and it's very impressive when it's all in one setting, but yes, there is the possibility for some things to be overlooked. That's just the way that it goes.
And then before we leave Turner, I got to give great kudos to Ernie Johnson, Shaquille O'Neal, Kenny Smith, and Charles Barkley, the NBA team. They were incredible. They had the audience also in the thousands rolling in the aisles. Yes, they went long, 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 but you loved it. It was all off the cuff. It was all spontaneous. It was incredible. They had Sharon Stone laughing like crazy. So when she killed, it was like saying, Sharon Stone, will you marry me? It was, look out, Jimmy Kimmel, you have company. Jimmy's been sort of like the popular celebrity that skewers the media every time he's with ABC's up front. But this is the first time that frankly, Kimmel did not get a lot of attention. And I love Jimmy Kimmel. But Charles and Ernie and the NBA crew with their wonderful catchy theme music, they stole the show. To me, they were the scene stealers of the entire Upfront event season last week.
Absolutely, and a shout-out to a past show guest, EJ, a singular talent there at Turner, and a very, very nice guy as well, and somebody who deserves all the success that he has. Sina, we have a chat question here, sent to me on private message, actually, from Tom Wilhelm. This is about the comic book phenomenon in TV the last couple of years. This has been a big trend of the last 3 or 4 years here, so what did the upfronts tell you about where it's going for next year and possibly beyond?
In a word, more. And that's good, because there's a lot of wonderful comic characters out there that deserve, I think, to be visualized on television. CBS is doing their first ever comic thing with Supergirl. It looks pretty good. I was very impressed by Greg Berlanti's DC Legends of Tomorrow, which is sort of a mix of his stuff from Flash and Arrow. They were introduced in a crossover episode earlier this season. I think the CW is a winner. I'm very surprised they're not putting it on in the fall. They're waiting until mid-season. But I'll tell you, I've been very impressed with the DC comic adaptations like Arrow and The Flash and, to some extent, Gotham on Fox. And of course, we have The Walking Dead. The whole graphic novel comic book world, I think we're just beginning to tap the depth of these comics. AMC has got a major project called Preacher, which is going to be a very controversial project if it comes to light. They're doing a pilot for it now. And you have some of the comic book companies like IDW and Dark Horse setting up their own production units. Not all comics, however, make the grade. A great example, of course, is Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. If you're wondering why that show is still on ABC, there's only one answer. It's Marvel, and Marvel's owned by Disney, and that's why it's hanging on, even though it is, by all accounts, a B-O-M-B. And, however, Agent Carter, I'm happy to say, is going to get a second shot. I liked Agent Carter, and I like the fact that Michelle Pfeiffer and Tara Butters did a great job on Law & Order Criminal SVU, then on Resurrection, at least in the first season, are doing it. I was very impressed with what they're doing, and I'm surprised they did not get a big audience off the bat. I think, and that's an example of a subsidiary character, a secondary character, who, if you flesh it out, could be a very good, I think, a star in the making. And I like the actress who played Agent Carter. So, bottom line, more comic book, more graphic novel adaptations. Robert Kirkman, of course, working on some other things, too, including Quarry for Cinemax coming out this fall. So, if you're a comic book fan, graphic novel fan, this scripted television movement, you're cheering it on, because you're going to be benefiting very much.
Certainly seems to be a very healthy trend in TV and something that's being very well accepted and, like you said, should only continue to grow. But, Simon, it's always a pleasure to have you on, my friend. It's always a great time talking to you, hearing you break it down. Nobody does it like you do. And, again, tomorrow will be televised, a great franchise. Everybody should continue to check out your shows and your ongoing columns. Thank you so much, my friend. I can't wait for the next time we do this again.
Let's do it soon, Rick. All the very best. Take care.
Thank you, Simon. Really appreciate it. Simon Applebaum, our friend, FDH Lounge dignitary, and from the great, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you all for joining us today, everybody, on FDH Lounge mini episode number 565.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.